This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Asma Farnhat, host for the People Speak Radio Show. Welcome to the show. This evening we have Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell, who has a doctorate, has served 20 years in the Navy, helped rescue the crippled Apollo 13 in 1970, and on February 5th, 1971, he became the sixth man to walk on the moon. That moon encounter soon became to a moment that changed his life forever, a moment that led to the development of one of the most reputable organizations in paranormal and psychic research, IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, whose membership both some of our the most reputable scientists in the world, including some of our past guests on the People Speak, Archbishop Desmond Tutu is a member of the board, as well as Adam Dreamhealer. Both of them were guests of ours on the show. Welcome to the People Speak Radio, Dr. Mitchell. How are you this evening?
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you this evening.
Well, we are thrilled to have you, sir. In light of, you know, I want to ask you how you felt about the launch the other day. I thought it was, obviously, every launch is stunning. Were you impressed with everything that went on, or did you have any concerns about how that went off?
It went very, very well. It was, after a rather difficult few months where the weather and the hailstorm had dinged up a bit of the machinery, that had to be repaired and wait out the time to go back. But the launch went very, very well. I was there. The weather was clear. Everything looked great, and everyone had a great time.
Probably had brought back some memories when you were doing some repairs of your own on Apollo 13.
Well, yes. There's always that problem with equipment like this that doesn't operate flawless, and we humans aren't flawless either. So quite often things happen that you have to be prepared to handle the unusual situation.
Dr. Mitchell, tell us a little bit about the noetic sciences and how it came about that you decided, you and the others, to institute this organization.
Well, this really came about from my space flight itself, in which I had the opportunity to look at Earth from space, which is impressive for all of us, and to realize that from my astronomy training in both Harvard and MIT, that the molecules of my body and the spacecraft and my partners in their bodies were all created and manufactured or prototyped in some ancient generation of stars. And instead of being intellectual knowledge, it was suddenly a very powerful visceral experience of connection, and accompanied by a blissful, ecstatic feeling that those were my molecules that were manufactured out there. And so I felt that connectivity with the universe, which the mystics have talked about forever, that somehow everything is all interconnected. And I realized at that time that perhaps the story of ourselves, as told by science, which is strictly materialist, was likely incomplete and perhaps flawed, and that the story of ourselves handed down through generations of culture was archaic and perhaps flawed. And maybe now that as a new spacefaring civilization, we needed to take a new look at some of these ancient questions, particularly since we were now really starting to explore the, off of our home planet, and have the equipment and science and technologies to really start to understand at a far deeper level, the nature of this universe that we're in. And so it was that beginning and the realization that in science, for at least 400 years since the time of Descartes and Newton, that the question of why are we conscious has not been a scientific subject, and that I thought that perhaps it should be, and that we needed to bring the tools of science into studying the cosmology or the origins of consciousness in a way that it hadn't been studied before. And that was the beginning idea for the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which I formed a couple of years after I got back from being on the moon.
So you speak of this epiphany that you had on board Apollo 14. Gary Zukav, the author of The Dancing Lead Masters and The Seat of the Soul, at one time was asked how he knew that there was more to the universe that meets the eye outside of course, his scientific research. And his answer was, there comes a time when you reach a place of knowing. Is that place of knowing what you are experiencing?
Well, I think maybe we have to be maybe a little careful of how we talk about knowing. That certainly the experience of experiencing is a valid thing for all of us. We have to experience. But then, being what we are, we interpret our experiences in terms of our knowledge, our background, our earlier experiences. And it doesn't mean that the way we interpret our experiences are always correct. As a matter of fact, they're simply based upon our own prior experiences and our cultural conditioning. And that is why the tools of science have become so important to us in the last 300 years, and particularly in this period of history, the last century. And that's because it gives us a way to validate much of what we think and which we believe when the tools of science are applied properly. And they aren't always, but by and large, in the idealized situation, when we apply these tools, then we have a much better chance of understanding what reality is. I like to tell a story, and I do it in my lectures quite frequently, to help get the idea across to audiences, that after our Civil War here in the United States in the 1860s, about 20 years later, 15, 20 years later, my great-grandparents went across from the southern state of Georgia to West Texas to become ranchers and settle in that land there. And they went out with a covered wagon and a team of horses and a few head of cattle. And that was in the 1880s. And the railroads had not been completed across the United States and the southern part of the United States yet. And automobiles had not been invented. And my father was born in the year the Wright brothers flew the first airplane, early in the 20th century. And I went to the moon. Now, that is from covered wagons to going to the moon in 100 years. And all of the centuries and millennium before us, the progress of humanity has been agonizingly slow as we have come forward from the state of our earlier being. And so we were able to do that because in this period, primarily of the late 19th, early, and 20th century, the science that we have created and the technologies we have created from that science have caused us to leap ahead, both for good and for bad, into a new total understanding of where we are and what this universe is all about. And as civilizations forever, I'm sure, throughout all history, we have asked the question, who are we? How do we get here? Where are we going? What is this really all about? Which are the deep questions. And it was my thought that here, as we are now the first generation to have gone off our planet altogether and seen the heavens and seen the cosmos from a new perspective entirely, that maybe we needed to re-ask those deep questions again from a new perspective. And that was a motivating force for all of my activities ever since, and the 36 years since I went to the moon, to answer these questions of who are we, how did we get here, where are we going, how can we preserve this civilization in a proper way. That has been the driving force and the driving motivation of my activity all this time.
Let me ask you, Dr. Mitchell, how do you reconcile as a scientist and how does one justify and reconcile science and still the unprovable world of the paranormal?
Well, I do not call it paranormal at all. I think that my postulate is that the universe is quite normal and knowable, and that between the two cosmologies that are being compromised and understood better now, the science cosmology, which it says it's all a matter of accident and the coming together of molecular structure from the Big Bang forward, and the other end, which says it all started as a result of consciousness, the idealist Platonic philosophy, I think that probably the true answer lies somewhere in between, and it's our task to discover that. And no, we don't know all the answers. We hardly know very few answers at all, but we're discovering more and more as we improve our tools of investigation and get to use the modern telescopes and instruments that we have to look deeper into our universe and deeper into matter itself, and to deeper into ourselves, we're learning a great deal.
I agree with you that this is absolutely a perfectly normal world. Very interesting. Let me ask you another question about this. You're the author of a book called The Psychic Exploration, A Challenge for Science. And this is actually considered a major reference book. And another one of your books is called The Way of the Explorer. Let me ask you, have any of these books actually been cited in more traditional mainstream science?
Oh, yes, they have been, particularly in the recent years, as we have started to be able to use quantum mechanics and some recent discoveries in quantum mechanics that bear very directly on what we have traditionally called the paranormal or parapsychology, and finding it's just a quantum phenomenon. It's a very natural phenomenon in the way that our universe and we are put together. And that evidence is overwhelming at this point. There's not really any question about it for those who have really studied it and done the experimental work. And a lot of experimental work has been done to help understand that this is truly natural phenomenon, nothing mystical about it at all.
Let me ask you, Doctor, the Noetic Institute has a really prolific agenda of studies engages in. Are you still directly involved in a lot of the research or any of the research?
Well, I am involved in quite a bit of research. I am not active in Institute of Noetic Sciences on a day-to-day basis. I sit on the board. I'm on the executive committee. I am present in many of the activities and at the annual conferences, but I am not in day-to-day active work. Dr. Marilyn Slips and Dean Radin are the prime scientists there at on location, and they're responsible for the research agenda at Noetics. I am working on a slightly different area on cosmology and the nature of consciousness, and developing some of these quantum mechanical concepts that have just arisen recently pertaining to biomatter, pertaining to mind and consciousness, pertaining to a whole new open door of research that has just emerged in the last decade or so.
You know, Dr. Mitchell, and for those of you who have just joined us in our listening audience, we are talking with Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell was the sixth astronaut to walk on the moon and the founder of the Noetic Institute. Let me, you know, one would think, Doctor, that during the, as soon as the issue of quantum physics and the development of the quantum sciences had come into effect, that a lot of this stuff would have been put to rest, that people could have seen that, in fact, what we view with our eyes isn't all there is to have. Why is it that the scientific community still holds these studies up to such intense scrutiny and such criticism?
Well, the answer to that is quite simple, and it is the weakness of we humans that, let me make a statement that came out of the late 19th century by Max Planck, a great physicist of that period, and he made the classic statement, which is so true, that progress isn't made by convincing skeptics, but funeral by funeral. In other words, the old generation has to die off before new ideas can prevail. And we have proved that to ourselves over and over and over so many times.
Yes, we have, I'm afraid.
That is particularly true in this area of the so-called parapsychology or paranormal, because you could not model it. We could not find a way to explain it within classical Newtonian physics, which has been around for 400 years. It's only with the beginning of the late 19th and early 20th century, when quantum mechanics was formulated, that we had a mechanism that began to shed light on these types of inner experiences and intuitive experiences. And unfortunately, but it is so true, that the other early physicists, rather than confront the issue of why we're conscious, chose to stay with what was called the Cartesian duality of René Descartes back 400 years ago, when he made the declaration, and he was a cardinal of the church and a great thinker and philosopher of that period, made the declaration that body, mind, physicality, spirituality belong to two independent realms of reality. Now, that served a very noble purpose. It got the Inquisition of the Holy Roman Church off the backs of the intellectuals, and they quit burning them at the stake for disagreeing. And it did free up the intellectuals to start to develop what we now consider classical science or Newtonian science. But because you cannot explain these types of human faculties within that framework, then it was considered witchcraft, it burned people at the stake, all of these sorts of crazy things took place. And so the early physicists really didn't want to confront that system or do anything about it. And so it has been a dogma for 80 years, since the early 1920s, that quantum physics only pertained to subatomic matter, that it really didn't pertain to things of our scale size. And so that has been a dogma, and that's what happened. But it's only in about the last 12 years that we have absolute proof and experimental evidence to show that that simply is not true, and that these principles pertain to everything. And let me just, I know this is kind of heavy stuff for some of our listeners, but let me say that we have, in our culture, called intuition our sixth sense. And that's been a cultural bias or a cultural phrase that we use to describe our intuition. When in reality, since it is rooted in the quantum mechanical properties of nature, it should be called our first sense. It was there long before we came around on this planet and before this planet even came around. So we are now entering into a totally new way of looking at ourselves, looking at bio-nature, looking at mind, that is quite revealing, quite powerful. And we still have just barely scratched the surface with this, just in the last few years.
Well, you know, I agree with you in fact that the Newtonian straight line thinking was actually kind of a double-edged sword, although it led us to an incredible developments in our field. It also limited us in our understanding of how things work. So,
well, true. It was just simply an approximation.
And
much of the work that we do today is our understanding in science, and particularly using our mathematical approach to it, are rather gross linear approximations to what nature is trying to tell us. It's really considerably more complicated than we have allowed ourselves to understand.
Exactly. And yet at the heart of it, it's that paradox that comes in. It's so complicated that it's simple. Let me ask you, you've made some very courageous statements, and you've taken the high road of ethics at a great risk to yourself in some areas that a lot of people would consider professional suicide in the field of science. One of them is things like spontaneous response and your work with Adam Dreamhealer, who was a guest on our show not too long ago. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, I have been observing this fact of healing and the role of intentionality and mind in healing since I came back from my space flight, and even before. I was interested in these faculties. And there is utterly no question, since I worked with Uri Geller, I've worked with Adam Dreamhealer, I've worked with a number of healers, and I've had these a phenomenon myself on my own body, that this is real stuff. But learning to understand it and model it within the structure of acceptable and good science is still a challenge. We don't have all those answers yet. For example, I'm quite well aware, and we know, that intentionality influences physical reality. It changes physical matter. But how exactly the quantum nature of our system permits that to happen, all of the nuts and bolts are still not sorted out yet. But we're getting much closer than we were before. And I have personally experienced this enough that there's not any question in my mind about it. It's just a matter of time until we have a much better understanding.
Well, you know, I agree with you that, in my impression, you know, a lot of the emphasis has been put on the area of intention, and I think that actually left another area that I feel that is extremely important in this process, and that is action, the mobility that action creates on the intention. And I think that's...
I couldn't quite understand you on that. Try me again.
You'll have to repeat
the last statement or so.
Action is, I think, the key. And action, the action of the intent has, I think, lost a little bit of significance in a lot of areas. People are so concerned with the intending, the intention of healing, the intention of putting out into the universe, that we forget that if you don't buy the lottery ticket, there's hardly a chance that you'll win the lottery.
That is quite true. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. You know, for those of you that are interested in this type of talk, because we are just getting, you know, a lot of great response for the dialogue that we're having, Dr. Mitchell, the Noetic Cafe on the Noetic Institute site, which we have been putting into our room and on our website, is a phenomenal place for this kind of dialogue. For those of you that are interested, I've often gone there myself. And engaged in great discussions. And congratulations on your site and the work that you're doing. I mean, now there's one other area that, of course, acts in my duty and my responsibility. Since you are an astral traveler, you have literally been in the astral world, more so than just in the dream stage. Your statement, a few insiders know the truth and are studying the bodies that have been discovered, said Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon. This was in Florida, Dr. Mitchell. And you were talking about alien bodies. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? You know, a lot of the astronauts have been cited as seeing unidentified flying objects in space during their flights, and many of them are coming out now and discussing these things. What are your feelings on this, Doctor?
Well, okay, I'll give you what I know. Let me first say that I have never had a firsthand experience with any extraterrestrial evidence. However, because of my position and because I am pretty well connected in this area, and also because I was born, rather I wasn't born, I grew up in the area of Roswell, New Mexico, which is
How fascinating. I didn't know that.
Famous sites with all of this. But the main issue here is that there are some of the what I called old timers who were around back in those days and who were military. They were in intelligence areas. And I have had the privilege of talking with them, people who were there, and they assured me that the Roswell incident was real and that the events were real and that they were under security oaths that they could not talk about it, but before they passed on, they wanted others to know the reality, and I was one of the ones chosen to receive this information. I also went a few years ago with some other gentlemen, another naval officer. I went to the Pentagon, told them what I knew and what we knew and what we suspected, and the officer that we talked with, a very high in the Joint Chiefs of Staff Intelligence Community, said, "I don't know about this, but I should, if it's real, I should be aware of it. I should be in charge of it. That's my job." And he went, he said, "I don't know about it, but I will find out." And I did get a call from him. We did get a call, got calls from him a bit later, a week or so later. And he said, "You're right, and I'm going to get involved." Well, he turned out he couldn't get involved either. They wouldn't let him in. And that has been the history since about the time of John F. Kennedy. I think President Kennedy was kind of the last presidential president that really had easy access into this knowledge. Some that know the history know that Barry Goldwater attempted to get to this sort of information back in the 60s. And again, Jimmy Carter, one of his presidential talks or in one of his talks, subsequent to becoming president, said that he had had experiences and he wanted to know about it, and he couldn't find out about it either. And President Clinton sent a fellow by the name of Webster Hubble, I believe, to find out, and he couldn't get in either. So see, we have something going on here that has been well covered up and denied continuously for about the last 50 years, but more and more and more the evidence is coming out. Now, none of us, that of my knowledge, have had any real experience in space with a UFO, certainly not up through the Apollo program that I was a part of. I have not personally talked with many of the younger astronauts and from the shuttle program. I understand there have been some incidences there, but I have no real knowledge of that.
I see. And let me ask you, I mean, obviously, being on the inside, talking to people that you obviously deem are credible people, that they're just not just anybody off the street deciding they just want to holler and hoot about what's going on. Do you believe we're alone in the universe, sir?
Of course, we're not alone in the universe. Absolutely not. I have been convinced for many, many years, and science is now starting to correctly demonstrate that of the millions and, well, let's go billions is the right word, billions of stars, galaxies, galactic clusters, and systems out there that there must be millions, if not billions, of planets capable of bearing life like ourselves, and perhaps more advanced than ourselves even, because they've been around longer, throughout the universe. The idea that we alone in this vast universe are a living intelligent species is absolutely ludicrous.
Well, you know, Dr. Mitchell, one of the things that I've always said myself, well, actually there are a couple of things that I'm going to mention. The first one is that either we got incredibly intelligent in the last 50 years, or we were incredibly ignorant for millions of years.
We have been incredibly ignorant for millions of years. That's not even in doubt in my mind, of course. That is what science has done for us, the tools of science, of public validation, experiment, hypothesis, experimental evidence, and the way science, when properly conducted, brings us new knowledge. That's the way it is, and we haven't had that until after the Newtonian period, and it's taken about 300 years, which really just a flash in the pan. That's no time at all to get to the point where we're really starting to understand the universe a little bit. And of course, at the end of the 19th century, there were the physicists and scientists who said all the knowledge to be gained has been gained. It's the end of acquisition of knowledge. Such a silly notion. And here we are a century later in all the developments, and we still don't know very much. We're still just beginning to explore this vast universe we're in.
It's such an amazing world. I have to take a break right now, Dr. Mitchell. And we'll be, ladies and gentlemen, we have Dr. Edgar Mitchell with us, founder of the Noetic Sciences, an American astronaut, sixth man to walk on the moon. So we'll be with you. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, folks, and get ready for your questions for Dr. Mitchell.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Randy Rhodes. You know, when Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held serious bipartisan investigations that did result in articles of impeachment. He resigned before he could be impeached, but strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war, lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court orders, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, tortured, used illegal weapons, and targeted civilians. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hey, welcome back to the People Speak Radio. This is Basma Farhat, your host, and tonight's guest is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, U.S. Astronaut. In 1971, Dr. Mitchell was the sixth astronaut to walk on the moon. And there he had an epiphanous experience that has changed his life, and here we are today talking about all of the incredible revelations that have come about. Our first guest, Matt from Kansas. Matt, would you let us know your question for Dr. Mitchell, please?
I don't hear anything. Is he? They got him in?
Matt, are you with us? Okay, our next question is from Seraphim Shock. Let me see. Would you please come to the mic and give your name, where you're calling from, and your question for Dr. Mitchell.
Dr. Mitchell, my name is Bob Dobbs. I'm here at Lake Titicaca in Peru. And my question is, it's quite simple. You know, I was studying the Noetic, at least your institute, the Noetic Institute, And my understanding of the word noetic is that it means mind, intellect, and the like. But the Institute is researching parapsychology, in a sense. It's almost delving into the supernatural, as if the human experience is not enough. We need to search for the sublime. And
well, I don't agree with your description of that, but go ahead.
I get the impression, and I could be wrong, and perhaps you can elaborate on this. Why is it I get the impression that the human experience is not enough, that we need to search for something other than what the senses give us? We need to search for something that's a little more esoteric. So, you know, that bothers me. It really does bother me, because it's sort of like a nihilist view on mankind.
Okay,
and,
well, let me interrupt
you at this
point.
The human experience is
because
enough.
You...
One last thing before I go. I understand you had an epiphany when you saw the world. Of course, naturally, you went into orbit. I would never see that, okay? But I had an epiphany when I drove a car the first time. And I don't mean to tell you or in any way elevate that to the level of what you saw, but I think it was just as important for me. And to create an institute based on an epiphany that was based on an experience that most humans can't share, I don't see how that makes sense. But if you can elaborate on why look for the sublime...
Well, if you'll hush up a minute, I'll be glad to tell you.
...what we see day to day, I'd like to know.
You missed what I said earlier. The point is, I don't believe it's a supernatural universe at all. It's a natural universe. And we humans have experiences all the time, and it's the only way we learn anything, to have experiences, whether it's your epiphany driving a car or mine in space, it teaches us something. And the whole point is to try to use the best tools we have to understand and create that knowledge in a powerful way. That's what science brings to us. It's what it has, and that's what I have done, and that's what many have done, is to use the best knowledge that we humans can come up with to try to understand the universe we're in. And contrary to the opinion or to the worldview and modeling from Cartesian times forward, we don't think it's a supernatural universe. It's a knowable universe. And anything that happens to us, we need to understand within that context. That's the end of my statement.
Thank you, Doctor. Our next question comes from Derek from Connecticut. Derek, can you please ask your question of Dr. Mitchell?
Thank you, Basima. Thank you, Dr. Mitchell, for being with us tonight. It's a great honor to have you here. I'm
Thank
speaking
you.
For a person from the audience who doesn't have a microphone. His name is Jesse, and he's located in Los Angeles, California. He'd like to know if you have any observations on the revelations of William Cooper, who speaks on the actual presence of UFOs and extraterrestrials actually working on the Earth and the Moon with scientists. And that comes from one of our audience members, Doctor.
No, I have no knowledge of the person that you're referring to, nor any knowledge of that. I am rather familiar with most of the lore from the UFO area, and there's a lot of weird and strange tales out there and a lot of claims, but there's very little that has ever been really substantiated, and we'll just have to wait to all of this to come on into public knowledge, and the true evidence that has been covered up and revealed, or rather not revealed, over the last 50 years will slowly start to come out. And I think that will happen in the next decade or so.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Our next question is from Crilly from South Carolina. Crilly, will you please come ask your question?
Yes. I was just wondering, if you smoke weed in space, will you never come down from your high?
I'm sorry, you have to repeat the question, please.
I think he was more of an agitator than anything else, Doctor.
Okay.
Our next question is from Wisdom S. Please come to the microphone. We are also taking calls. For those audience members, 888-861-3519 is the toll-free number. You can call and talk and ask your question in person. Go right ahead, Wisdom.
No, my name is Mike. You got that wrong. I would like to ask Dr. Mitchell, first of all, I'm from California. I'd like to ask Dr. Mitchell, does he think we have a chance of surviving, considering the enormous amounts of problems that we face environmentally, from weapons of mass destruction also, biological, nuclear, chemical, from the huge sociological problems we have? I'd like to know his honest opinion. What percent of success does he give us to last into the next century? Thank you.
Well, I wish I could put a number on it, but I am with you in recognizing, and I have been talking to this issue myself for over 20 years, is that we are on an unsustainable, non-sustainable path on Earth, and the simplest way to say that is that every measure of human activity that we can measure is on an exponential growth curve, which means that the rate of growth is increasing. And it doesn't take genius to understand that exponential growth cannot continue indefinitely in a finite space. And we're in a finite space on this Earth. So, yes, sustainability and preserving our civilization from certain extinction, if we don't do something differently, is a paramount problem at this time. And it's worth all of us bending our brains to it and our actions to it, because we must learn to deal with, number one, our population explosion, the fact that we're consuming like crazy, destroying the environment like crazy, other species are becoming extinct, our water tables are dropping, a whole host of problems that can be cited, and we best learn to confront this and deal with it, or we will not be able to survive this next century or so, as you point out.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Matt. Matt, can you ask Dr. Mitchell your question, please?
Yes, Dr. Mitchell. My question is, sir, is with all this cut in funding and NASA, do you think it will be effective on our future program in space? Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't get all of his words. Could you repeat his question?
I believe that he was questioning all of the issues that we have with greenhouse gases and many of the global warming issues. Will it affect our issues in space?
Well, certainly those are powerful issues and a part of the sustainability issue that we were talking about. There are many that believe that, and I'm one of them, that believe that space and our exploration and our presence in space can help us resolve some of these issues, because it gives us a visibility of Earth that we don't have other ways. It gives us insight. It also, in some way, gives us a potential to be off this planet, or at least preserve our civilization by going off this planet. And in due course, we can probably do that. And I believe if we continue our science and our technologies, we might even be able to go outside our solar system by the end of this century that we're in now, provided we don't blow ourselves up in the process of with our weapons of mass destruction and our nuclear weaponry. But we have a real challenge at this point in history to accommodate this population, to bring the gap between the haves and the have-nots into a more workable juxtaposition, and to address this problem of sustainability that the previous caller was talking about, which I agree with. So we can do it. I have faith in us. I have faith that we're an intelligent species and can solve our problems. We just need to get on with it.
Let me ask, I have a question, Dr. Mitchell, that I'd like to ask. Well, how deeply invested are the launches, the space launches, the work that's done in investigating the issues of global warming? Or is that done more through the satellite launches?
Well, all of the above. I mean, we don't need to be in space to investigate global warming and what's going on in the atmosphere and in the ozone layers. We can do that quite well from on Earth and from balloons and other devices. But getting a survey, getting a look at Earth from space, getting the overview effect, which many of us have had, to see the bigger picture. And I challenge our listeners here, you know, one of the big benefits of going into space has been called the overview effect. It's a big picture. It's getting on the mountaintop and seeing things in a different perspective. There's a lot to be said for that. And what we humans need is to get out of our cultural sleep, as it were, bound into our cultural thinking, and start to think in a global fashion, which we have not been doing. And we need to do that in order to see ourselves in this larger picture.
That must have been an incredible experience, suddenly being bigger than the Earth. I can imagine that must have been a very cathartic moment for anybody that goes through that.
It was that, and as I pointed out earlier in my talk, that many of the astronauts who have been to the moon and came back and looked at Earth were really swept away and really taken with all of that. Now, we've explained it some in different ways. Those steeped in their religious tradition were more inclined to say looking on the face of God. I, being more of a scientist philosopher, was thinking, okay, here's something psychological going on here. I want to know what it is. And so I spent time studying that phenomenon. But the fact that getting out of the Earth and taking a look at Earth and seeing ourselves in the position of off the planet is a powerful experience. And I would remind our listeners, it's no really different than the ancient Phoenicians who took their early ship and started investigating the Mediterranean, or the South Sea Islanders who in their outrigger canoes started crossing the Great Pacific to explore and to go beyond. We're just a few steps further down the line, going off the planet entirely because we have the technology to do so, to find out what our destiny is and what is the destiny up there.
Well, it is an obligation that a lot of us, I think, are not taking too seriously. Our next question is again from Derry. Derry, from Connecticut, please come to the microphone and ask your question.
Thank you again, Bassima. I again have another question from someone in the audience who does not have a microphone tonight. And this is from Jamal in New York City. He would like to know what the doctor thinks about The Universe in a Nutshell by Stephen Hawking. And does Stephen's theory play any role in NASA? Thank you.
What was the last statement? Did what play any role?
Does Stephen Hawking's theory play any role in NASA?
No, I don't know that how much role it plays in NASA. I'm not involved too much with NASA management at this point. But, of course, Stephen Hawking is one of the world's great thinkers at this point in time, and certainly helped us understand things like black holes and the radiation from black holes and much about the physics of our universe. So all of that is very vital knowledge that is a part of the modern scene. And certainly Stephen Hawking thinking has been provided great insights and great new knowledge at our point in time.
Indeed he has. Our next question is from Donna. Donna, will you please let us know where you're from and the question for Dr. Mitchell?
Hi, I'm from Dallas, Texas. Donna, hi, Dr. Mitchell.
Hi there.
I was wondering, have you seen the video that David Sirita has out explaining UFO propulsion and from when they lost the tether out there?
Whose video?
I thought it was quite remarkable itself.
I haven't
I don't know if you've seen another video. I posted a link here, but you can't see it. But everybody else can.
I did not hear what video you referred to. I'm quite familiar with many of the various theories purporting anti-gravitational propulsion, rotational magnetic fields, and so forth. I'm not quite sure which one will win out, which one is the real one, but there's a lot of good investigation going on at this point.
Our next question is Wisdom from Chicago. Wisdom, your question for Dr. Mitchell, please.
Okay, greetings there. Dr. Mitchell, truly an honor to get an opportunity to address you. My question, Dr. Mitchell, is that, you know, with what is the ultimate objective for going out into space? I know I've heard you touch upon it, but as far as, you know, what I'd like to know is, what is the ultimate objective we're trying to do? Are we trying to exit this planet? Are we trying to repair this planet? We live on this planet here. And it's always been a concern of mine when people venture out away from the problems that we have here, thinking that we're going to solve it out in space. From what I've seen, there's a lot of debris in space from the space flight. So I'm just curious, what is the ultimate objective? And do you all discuss that before your
what
mission
you're saying
or
is,
during your training, what you're trying to do ultimately? Thank you.
What you're saying is true. There's debris in space, and we have to be careful about that. But let me put it in, again, the larger picture. If you studied any astronomy and planetary formation whatsoever, you'll recognize that this planet and our star has a finite lifetime. As a matter of fact, our planetary system is about halfway through its lifetime, 5 billion years. So in the long run, in another 5 billion years, this planet and the star system, the star is going to burn out. Now, I would like to think that we can be out of here before then. Our civilization will continue, and by then we can be somewhere else. But in the meantime, so in that sense, space exploration is our ultimate destiny if we want to survive as a species. In the meantime, we're learning a lot about ourselves, about our place in the universe, about our own planet, simply by going off the planet and observing it.
Dr. Mitchell, one of the questions, too, was not just about the space debris. Wisdom asked, what is the ultimate objective to going into space? I have an interest in that, too, because to be quite honest with you, you know, we have programs, we have military programs that are being launched into the cosmos, and which is very disturbing to me. It's like we don't have the availability or the capacity to kill all life on Earth already. I mean, how many do we have to do it from outer space as well? Which I find to be interesting. So either we're afraid of something else out there and trying to protect ourselves, or I don't understand otherwise.
Well, let's put it in a little different context. I personally, and I think you and many of our listeners perhaps, are certainly pacifists. And I think that unless we learn how to live peacefully with each other and get past this very primitive behavior, a warlike behavior where we settle our disputes with violence and nation against nation, unless we learn to get past that, and since we have nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction, if we don't get past that, we will surely use them at some point. And so the ultimate goal I was talking about of getting off the planet before our system burns out, the likelihood is we will burn ourselves up or kill ourselves off with our stupidities of violence. So part of my thinking always has been, since my space flight in particular, although I also spent 20 years in the Navy, and in a war, I am absolutely violently opposed to, and violently I say in my thought, I believe violence is absolutely the wrong way to approach anything. And we must get past that. But in the long run, we must get beyond this planet if we're going to survive as a species. So I believe it's our destiny.
Let me ask you, Doctor, what are your views on God?
On what, please?
On God.
On God?
Yes.
Well, I certainly do not think the grandfather figure God that has been a traditional Western view, that is not the concept of God or deity that I think. I tend to think in the larger sense of the collective mind, the intelligence in the universe, and to think in this much longer, in much longer terms, that we can probably answer this question much better the more we understand about our place in the universe and what this universe is really all about. We simply are just barely out of the trees. We're very primitive people. And I think our concept of deity is rather primitive, or has been.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on that. And in this, and again, we're running short of time, and I did want to ask you one question. How do you feel the world perceives the United States of America and our actions in light of what's going on, in light of the fact that we are acting quite barbarically?
Well, that's exactly what we have been. We've been acting in the last few years very barbaric, and preemptive wars and wars for the wrong reasons, and calling it one thing and doing another. We have not been a very honorable country in the last 6 years, and I hope that we can turn that around, and it's likely to take decades for that to be the case with the proper leadership. And frankly, right now, I don't think we have the right leadership.
And your view on President Bush, in brief, because we're running out of time?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear what's your question?
I was asking your view on President Bush and his administration.
Well, he's been a real leader of taking us down the path we've been, and I think it's the wrong path.
Amen. Thank you very much, Doctor. It's been a pleasure. I want everybody to know we have been speaking this evening with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, astronaut extraordinaire, and the founder of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. You can go to the Noetic Cafe. You can become members. And check on our website, thepeoplespeakradio.org. For more information on the Noetic organization, it is an incredible organization. Next week, our guest is Allison Weir, founder of ifamericansknew.org. You can, again, read up on Allison Weir on our website, The People Speak Radio. We want everybody to know that it's been a pleasure to have all of you with us this evening. Thank you again, Doctor, for being here.
Thank you.
It's been an honor.
We'll talk again.
Thank you. We will indeed real soon. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay, that's
good night.
You guys have a great evening. We'll see you next week with Allison Weir on the People Speak Radio. Bye-bye, everybody.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the big wall by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours, man. This land is mine, land from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.